Well, now to Iraq, where today Secretary of State John Kerry said there is no military solution that will end the Sunni offensive against the Shiite-led government. As the fighting continues and the debate in Washington about U.S. involvement continues, we want to spend some time now with a military analyst whose son was killed by an IED in Iraq in 2007. Andrew Basevich is a professor of international relations and history at Boston University's Pardee School of Global Studies. He's also a retired Army colonel who served in the Vietnam War. And Andrew Basevich, what do you think right now of the argument that the U.S. created this problem in Iraq and now has a responsibility to do something to fix it?
Well, I suppose there's merit to that argument. But then the follow-on question has to be, what capacity do we have to fix what we've broken? I'd judge our capacity as pretty limited. I mean, when you think about it, we intervened in 2003. We occupied the place for 8+ years. During that period of time, we attempted to build a legitimate government. We attempted to build effective security forces to lay the foundation for a stable country. Now, here we are 2.5 years after our departure, and the place has fallen apart. So if in 8.5 years, $1 trillion or so, we couldn't get the job done, what would it take to get the job done today?
300 military advisors going over there, not nearly enough, you think?
Well, I'd be a bit skeptical. Again, The Iraqi army that has performed so poorly is in many respects the handiwork of an American effort on a far larger scale. Now, it's not that 300 advisors can't do anything. My guess would be that they will be most effective in perhaps providing some intelligence that could be useful to the Iraqi military, and they can basically serve as the mechanism to provide air support. Now, if you're a big believer in air power, you might say, well, that might be enough. I wonder how effective air power will be against these ISIS forces who are not, in a conventional sense, an army. They are a bunch of militants in pickup trucks who don't necessarily constitute the sort of targets that are optimized for air power.
Well, if air power is not enough, and President Obama has said he doesn't want to send combat troops back into Iraq, does the result then become an ISIS-controlled Iraq, or at least a lot of Iraq controlled by ISIS?
Well, that's the $64 question. I mean, you know, we each can gaze into our crystal ball and speculate, but that's all we're doing. My guess would be that ISIS does not have the capability to seize Baghdad, to overthrow the government. They're not strong enough, and certainly they're not going to be strong enough to take on a much, much larger Shiite population. So what are the possibilities? I can see two. One would be that basically the country fragments into three parts, a Shiite-dominated part, a Sunni-dominated part, a Kurdish-dominated part, and those three factions or the leaders of those factions accept that outcome, and then we'll have a de facto partition. The other possibility is that we have fragmentation where the leaders of the factions don't accept that outcome or can't agree on the borders, as it were, the internal borders or boundaries. And then you could see a protracted and very bloody civil war. Neither of those be particularly good news from the point of view of the United States. But again, you come back to the question of, practically speaking, what can we do? And this may be one of those circumstances where we need to acknowledge that we don't have sufficient power, influence, leverage, determination, domestic popular support to actually make much of a difference.
What do you make of the reemergence in recent weeks of the neoconservatives who were instrumental in getting us into Iraq 11 years ago? Paul Wolfowitz, Paul Bremer, Bill Kristol, even former Vice President Dick Cheney.
Well, I mean, many people have commented on this, and I'm struck by their collective shamelessness. They take to the airways or the op-ed pages, and they point fingers at President Obama, and everything that has gone wrong is supposedly Obama's fault. There is no acknowledgement, and this is the part that I think many people find distressing. There's no acknowledgement of the role that they played in advocating the unnecessary and misguided intervention in Iraq in the first place. So there's an astonishing sort of shamelessness on their part. The bigger question, I think, is why do the op-ed pages of major American newspapers open themselves up to the commentary by these people who were so wrong? Why do the Sunday talk shows on the major TV networks invite people like Wolfowitz or William Kristol to pontificate on what we should do now? And I think the answer to that is that I think it's testimony to the way that particularly the large-scale mainstream media have been captured by kind of a Washington mindset and a belief that only people who somehow move in those circles have something to say. So in upshot, of course, is that at a time like this, when there really is great need, I think, for a serious debate, how did the United States get into this predicament and what can be done? Instead, the debate we get, it's kind of a phony debate, is one of Republicans blaming Democrats and Democrats blaming Republicans, and it's not particularly illuminating.
We're speaking with Andrew Bacevich, a professor of international relations and history at Boston University's Pardee School of Global Studies. You can leave your thoughts on this story at hereandnow.org. Stay with us. It's Here and Now. It's Here and Now. Let's get back to our conversation with military analyst Andrew Bacevich. He's a professor of international relations and history at Boston University's Pardee School of Global Studies. He's also a retired Army colonel who served in Vietnam, and he lost a son to the Iraq War back in 2007. Andrew Bacevich, I want to ask you about something else that has been talked about, and that is the idea of the U.S. working more closely with Iran to help stop this crisis in Iraq. What do you think of that?
I think it's something that should be explored. Here, I myself tend too frequently to reach for a Vietnam analogy, but I do think there's a Vietnam analogy. And the analogy has to do with Richard Nixon's successful effort to salvage something useful from the debacle of Vietnam. And he salvaged something useful. The war was lost. The war was a mistake. The war was a catastrophe. But toward the end of the war, Nixon famously initiated this opening up to China, which didn't enable us, didn't change the result of the Vietnam War. But what it did was to change the strategic landscape in ways that was very favorable to the United States. And I think that what we ought to be doing now, we ought to consider whether or not an opening to Iran can have similar effects. And let me emphasize here, I'm not talking about tactical cooperation with simply in order to try to restabilize Iraq. There may be some merit to that. I'm talking about ending the isolation of Iran, exploring the possibility that Iranians may at this juncture, long after the Iranian revolution was in its most ideological phase. At this juncture, the governing classes in Iran may conclude that they have something of a stake in stability and in reintegrating Iran into the larger international community.
But do they have their eyes on an expansion of their own borders?
Well, I don't know, and that's what would have to be explored. I mean, there was a time in the immediate aftermath of the Iranian Revolution, when it appeared, at least, that the Iranian government had a pretty pronounced expansionist ideological agenda. They made a revolution in Iran because they intended to spread that revolution. Well, that was then and this is now. And what's happened since then, if at least as I read the Iranian domestic political situation, is it that those revolutionary ambitions have pretty much burned themselves out, and that the purposes of the Iranian government at this stage are far more modest and arguably, again, this is what needs to be explored, arguably not inconsistent with our own. And so I'm not trying to tell you that it's sort of a slam dunk, let's do it tomorrow. I'm simply saying that the Obama administration, which has not demonstrated a heck of a lot in terms of creativity and boldness, could be well advised to explore the possibility of a Nixon-like opening with Iran.
What about Iraq's other neighbor, Turkey, and the idea that if, as you say, the country splits into three parts and one of them is a Kurdish section, that that may expand into Turkey and Turkey's territorial integrity could be harmed?
Well, a good question. And of course, this is a question that relates to what are the aspirations of the Kurds. Now, what I've read of late is that the Turkish government, which you might speculate would be very concerned about this, actually seems to be ready to cut a deal with the new Kurdish quasi-state that has now come into existence. Now, what are the conversations between the Turks and the Kurds? Are the Kurds offering some assurances that they don't have territorial ambitions that would get into Turkish territory? I don't know. But there does seem to be some possibility of some sort of agreement between this new Kurdish quasi-state and Turkey, an agreement that a decade ago we would have said would be impossible.
We talked about the Bush administration and the people who played a role in getting us into the war in Iraq 11 years ago. How do you think the Obama administration is handling this situation now?
Well, the president learned something very important from the Bush administration, at least as I judge his behavior, and that is that invading and occupying countries is a bad idea, that it costs too much and doesn't get anything done. But having learned that, the president had been struggling really for the past half a dozen years to formulate a distinctive, less risky, less costly approach to trying to stabilize the region that we have destabilized. And what he's come up with is a reliance on small-scale military power. Probably the signature would be the missile-firing drone. It's also special operations forces. It's the limited use of air power and the like. He seems to be persuaded that using military power on a small scale can yield large positive political results. And he's now testing that proposition in Iraq, testing the proposition that 300 advisors, perhaps, seems likely, backed by some amount of air power, can save the day there. I think that's a very risky bet. It'd be great if it turns out to be right. I think the president's problem is, what happens if the bet doesn't turn out right? In other words, we put in the advisors, we bomb for 6 or 8 days, and ISIS continues to rampage around the country. Then what? And the president's problem, of course, is going to be that having declared that this is a very, very important issue, a threat to our own security, he and Kerry have said, and having now made a small military investment that fails, then what do you do? And the temptation is going to be very strong to escalate.
Well, let's listen here to Secretary of State John Kerry speaking yesterday in Baghdad.
The additional advisors are coming in and dispersing to their various posts and brigades, and they will be making assessments, and that will help define the strategy on the security front.
So, Andrew Bacevich, you're concerned that this will lead to further U.S. involvement in Iraq?
Well, the president has clearly stated he doesn't want that to happen. You know, when he's repeatedly said, no boots on the ground, no boots on the ground. The problem is that when you go in part way, it becomes difficult then to withdraw. To withdraw is to acknowledge failure. And the political costs for him of acknowledging failure are going to be great. And therefore, the temptation, well, let's try a little bit harder. And that puts you on this escalatory path, which he may not want to follow. But circumstances could draw him down that path.
Andrew Bacevich is a professor of international relations and history at Boston University's Pardee School of Global Studies. He's also a retired Army colonel who served in the Vietnam War. Andrew Bacevich, such a pleasure to have you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And what do you think? Should the U.S. be sending military advisors to Iraq to stop ISIS from taking over parts of the country? Is ISIS a threat to the United States? And do you think the Obama administration is doing too much or not enough? You can weigh in at hereandnow.org. You can also send us a tweet. We are at Here and Now, at Here and Now Robin, at Jeremy Hobson. You're listening to Here and Now.